Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Oh, Mama Gasbu, unfortunately, the audio on your WhatsApp is actually quite low, your voice note. But I can hear what you're trying to say, essentially commenting on the wellness days that we do have. Let's hear what Mr. J Nguyenya has to say. Babu Nguyenya.
I'd just like to say that it was because SAPS was approving everything. But now, because of Segunala, Baba Kalisi, Dulo, Baba Spinang, Dulo, Emma Officine, so the swag niggas are going to get up. So, I smile, see my mail into me a corner, got a election. My inspector, something with the other way, you understand? So I didn't tell you, but I didn't say it's all nice, make it explain, but I've seen the corner, I didn't say sharp.
Siyabonga Babu Nguyenya, commenting on a conversation we had with the National Consumer Commission there about inspections that they've been rolling out in retail stores. As you heard, largely within the independent retail owners, I'm a cash and carry, and most of them are really within our townships. Babu Nguyenya saying, this thing doesn't work. But let's also be aware as consumers. So I'm hoping that that counts for something. Z?
Hi, Sis Gugu. Thank you for such a great show. Zanele here. I want to ask Sis Gugu to say, when coming to social media, where prices are not displayed, and every time when the small businesses advertising products, and at the same time, these clothes that we also find in Chinese stores to say, what does the Consumer Commission say that you are not allowed to return and get a refund? And I want to know to say, how do they keep that, especially when going to a Chinese store, you buy something, tomorrow it is broken, and then you cannot get your money back, and you cannot also return it. So how does the commission deal with helping the citizens in terms of addressing that? Thank you.
Z, such a wonderful question. And I tell you what, we will get the NCC back. That's the National Consumer Commission back, just to help us understand, you know, how they are following through with making sure that these companies and retailers are held to account. Z is commenting on a conversation we had with the National Consumer Commission, essentially listing at least 45 stores that they say are selling goods that are spoiled, past their sell-by date, damaged goods, not issuing receipts. And as you heard, Babu Nguyenya mentioning, goodbye. We see the call, but I say Benzilent. But at least there's some kind of proactive action. When it comes to perhaps stores where there is no corrective action, I know that the tribunal typically issues fines, but maybe that's also the problem. These companies just pay a small fine, typically 10% of their revenue, and then life goes on. But there needs to be a better level of accountability, because for as long as we're supporting these stores, as long as they are making money, they are able to pay off these fines while still doing us a disservice. But share your thoughts with us. 063-688-0959. Let's deep dive now into getting a better understanding of the first 100 days of what being a CEO typically looks like. Typically, you would know that we love evaluating what the journey of a CEO looks like. We speak to them on results, on their leadership lessons, but we also want a better understanding of the climate and the ecosystem of being an executive of a large listed entity in South Africa. Now, recent news headlines featured the likes of Calvo Mawela as the CEO of MultiChoice, receiving a 35 million rand payout on the back of the results that he had delivered for the company. Now, bear in mind, that company has been experiencing significant losses in the last few years and largely is also potentially going to be bought out by Canal Plus. His salary, whilst incredibly high at 35 million rand, is still slightly lower than what he had received in previous years at 51 million rand. But beyond that, we're also going to talk about another gentleman who has shifted his colors in the banking fraternity from blue to red. Mr. Kenny Fihla officially took over as the CEO of Absa Group in mid-June. And as we know, this is typically the first 100 days where he's been interacting with many staff. A few peers, colleagues and acquaintances who work there have told me that it's been a breath of fresh air. Lots of excitement around his appointment, not only internally, but even from external stakeholders. But What does it entail? Someone who is very close to these dynamics and has often assisted in appointing CEOs to companies, evaluating the process of selection, and of course even reflecting on their journeys with them pre and post executive positions, is a good friend of the show. Mr. Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director of AMROP Woodburn Mann. Andrew, such a pleasure to touch base with you again, and sad that you couldn't make it in studio tonight.
As always, Gugu, lovely to hear you on air.
Awesome. Excited to speak to you about this one here, Andrew. As you've heard, there's two various themes that I'm quite keen for us to discuss tonight. But let's start off with Mr. Kenny Fihla, official CEO of Absa Now, since the mid-June, if I'm not mistaken. It's still early days, still getting his feet wet and, of course, acclimatizing to the environment. But using this as a case study, typically, what does the first 100 days in office for a CEO entail?
Yeah, Gugu, that's a good one. I mean, there's no hard and fast rule. In fact, this first 100 days is sort of a general rule of thumb that came out from a few books, the Harvard Business Review, a couple of McKinsey case studies they did, and so on. Mm-hmm. So we'll go with it. But at group level, honestly, a new CEO has very limited ability to make significant changes in the first 100 days. If it's a business rescue case or a turnaround case, then of course, a little bit like, I think, Phil Rue at NAMPAC, some significant decisions have to be taken. Mm-hmm. But in Kenny's case, this is a big ship, and the first 100 days are really about learning, listening, thinking on his behalf. He would have already, though, in his negotiations with the nominating committee, had interesting conversations on a few dynamics. The first would have been, what are his long-term incentive programs based on? And that might be some measurable metrics at stock level, EBITDA, market share, discussions with the board. You know, that could be everything from share of market of home loans to vehicle finance to how his insurance division's doing and so on. Mm-hmm. So those things might be the long-term ones. But can he, in 100 days, show material change to those kind of metrics? Unlikely. Maybe, but unlikely. Mm. More, it's around listening, learning, and then returning with either some tactics. Those would be short-term engagement models that he's going to activate to the board, and or his medium-term strategy, what he's going to do to the various subsidiaries, divisions, how he's going to make changes, and so on. So those are the sort of, let's say, the cornerstones of what he's going to return on the 100 days. There are a couple of other things that are going on simultaneously. So the board may have given him a few pain points that in their mind they were carrying, because of course we know the Red Bank has been having, let's say, a little bit of a revolving door for senior executives.
A very busy one.
And word on the street. Correct. And word on the street, of course, is the culture isn't as progressive and constructive as individuals might want. Mm-hmm. So there he's got to get busy, you know, either formulating a change management plan or some form of cultural and leadership change. And certainly in the 100 days, he would want to be bedding down his exco, either assessing and making clear decisions on the exco he has, mm-hmm. or identifying gaps that he wants filled and going to the market through partners like ourselves. And that he would already be underway with. In Kenny's case, of course, we've got an additional layer to this. So you've got long-term incentive and measures. You've got short-term actions that he would be already embarking on. And then in my mind, you've got this third layer for Absa, which is that pattern you and I talked about culture and the revolving door of either interim executives or others that have come and gone in short order. Mm-hmm. And there he might partner with his chairman, and I know the chair very well. They've also got a new chair in Renee, very sharp individual, long-term banking, seasoned banker. So the CEO might partner with the chair, probably be a wise idea, but in fact has to carry almost a personal plan so that he himself doesn't become a victim of this pattern. Let's just call it a pattern, right? Mm. That we've seen over the last 3+ years. And so he has to be activating really on 3 levels in order to become what I believe to be the first medium-term successful CEO Absa's head in Hawaii.
Got you. Does his reputation, though, given that Kenny Fihla has been in the industry for years on end, has had a remarkable journey at his predecessor, his former company, Standard Bank, does his reputation, I guess, precede him, where it should make the lay of the landscape a little easier to navigate?
Look, maybe is the answer to that. You know, he himself is a seasoned banker, but he had Sim above him, and before that, Jaco Maria at Standard Bank. He had a well-defined framework and brand and culture to work within. And of course, his new seat comes with a little more heat than what I've just described. Mm-hmm. So he's got a little bit more uphill to deal with. But having said it, you know, the old adage stands true. A new broom can sweep clean. And I don't only mean on those around him. I mean on all the debates we've had this evening, you know, all the identifiable issues. So I think he's coming with a very good chance. But he certainly needs to heed some of the warnings I've provided in this conversation about the things that are going on in the place he arrives in.
Got you. Something else I do want to squeeze in here, Andrew, is a development that took place literally last week, Friday, and that was Standard Bank, again, former employer of Kenny Fihla, but one that really does help us understand what's happening in the banking fraternity. When we last touched base with you, we spoke about adequate succession planning and the hunger and competitiveness for talent, skill, and executive leaders. Standard Bank's leader, Sim Tshabalala, decided to announce that they had increased the retirement age for executive of the bank from 60 to age 63. And I think this is also quite telling of honing in institutional knowledge, having a few more years to allow for an adequate transition, as well as leadership within the organization. But I'm quite keen to hear your perspective around the decision taken by Sim Tshabalala here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I am a big fan in our country in particular of extending the working age for many, many reasons. The first is we know that our talent pool is shrinking. And by that, I mean the educated, seasoned, experienced, long-running leadership talent at executive and board level. We know we're having retirements. We know we're having immigration. And our economy is not helping our businesses, probably since the first term of Jacob Zuma. And so what that means is that we are seeing certainly boards selecting executives with a seasoned and well-proven track record. Mm-hmm. And that means the needle pre-COVID, and you and I know this, from year 2000, in my mind, up to, let's say, the global financial crisis, and, you know, I'm showing my age here, Gugu, but there we had a very big trend of younger is better. So technology was the cornerstone of many businesses. We were cloud computing. SAP was coming in to do everything for us. And so we had this very big trend of younger is better post Y2K. And we saw appointments even in their late 30s of CEOs coming in to lead medium to large businesses. And of course, we saw a big wave of entrepreneurs in that age group as well. But subsequent to the global financial crisis, we've seen a number of black swan events. We've seen the economy struggling, and therefore we've watched NOMCOs and owners begin actually to swing that needle back to those who've done it before, those they can rely on, those who've been there and have the ability to deliver.
Yes.
And so I would say to you, whereas in the 2000 to 2010, we had a younger is better model, we're now seeing that needle come back to the middle where diversity across the age range is probably good. Mm-hmm. But in fact, we're seeing boards and shareholders preferring to bet on individuals who can show a great track record of delivery. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to get transformation and we're not going to get diversity. Mm-hmm. But what it does mean is the younger individuals who might have been getting very used to being promoted once a year, every year, right, beginning to run into the process like used to happen pre the 2000s, where in fact you begin to spend more time in the one-off exco level and in exco seats to show what you're capable of, before potentially maybe getting a CEO, CFO, or COO role,
yes,
probably in your very late 40s or early 50s, still giving the company a chance to get 10 plus years from you. And we're seeing, because of this narrowing of the talent pool, boards and owners being very happy to extend tenure of key executives if they're delivering, if the board believes in them, and if they're in good health and capable to continue well, in fact, into the mid to late 60s.
Gotcha.
You know, retirement ages now of 65 or even later are now more common than you'd like to know.
Hmm.
I mean, I think it's only the big four accounting firms and one or two others that want to hold the 60-year ceiling. But in Standard Bank's case, it might have been a slight surprise that Kenny left. He may have been a key cornerstone in the Standard Bank succession. With his exiting, the board might have looked to Sim to say, well, can you give us more time? Hence the reason to extend the retirement age. But that's only one reason for it. I hope I've touched on a number of other contributing factors. And therefore, what I'm saying to top executives now, white, black, male, female, Indian, black, colored, it makes no difference. If they are good, the economy needs them and our country needs them to perpetuate our economy, hopefully to help South Africa sort of climb back into the GDP 1+ growth area. And it's those who know how to do it that we need.
Got you. So important. Have the knowledge, have the skill, have the capability. And you're quite right. There's a certain beauty about institutional knowledge that really does shift the needle. And I guess one day we'll likely refer to the likes of Pick and Pay with Sean Summers at the helm right now and reflecting
you've
on the
turnaround. You've got it. You've got Charter Tiger. I mean, there's a number of them that have got what I call the old bulls, the who are coming back into place and doing what they need to do. And, you know, the numbers will speak for themselves, right?
Definitely. And we'll touch base with you on that one, right? Not just the numbers, the personality dynamics, the, I guess, environment as well that contributes to the growth, but also the character of leadership that we see in South Africa, which for the most part has proven to be very formidable within the business space. Andrew, we'll leave it there for tonight, but always such a pleasure speaking to you, sir.
Likewise, Gugu, thank you for having me. And to your listeners, thank you very much.
Thank you. Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director of AMROP Woodburn Man.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.